Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
You have year-end goals. Constant Contact has what it takes to help you meet them faster. Sell more, raise more, and build real relationships with your audience with Constant Contact's digital marketing tools. Put the go in all your 2024 goals with email, social, SMS, and customized marketing campaigns built for you in just a few clicks. Now through December 4th, get 40% off any Constant Contact marketing plan for 3 months. Ready, set, go to ConstantContact.com and get started today.
Black Friday has officially started at Blinds.com, and the savings are huge. Right now, you can save up to 50% site-wide and score premium doorbusters and a free professional measure. Don't wait. These deals are happening right now. Swapping out old blinds for custom window coverings is a small project with big results, and Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. With Blinds.com, there are no long lines or confusing quotes. You shop online without sacrificing quality, style, or service. One of our design experts can help you make the perfect selection on your schedule. We can even handle everything from measure to install. Plus, you get window treatments for your whole home installed for just one low cost. With over 25 million windows covered, Blinds.com is the number one online retailer of custom window coverings. Blinds.com's Black Friday sales event is happening now with our best deals of the season. Save up to 50% site-wide and score premium doorbusters and a free professional measure at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
When you stop to think about what has happened to Cook County's criminal justice system over the past 8 years or so, it's amazing how much has changed. And Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox has been in the middle of much of it. But she's going to leave that office now. So it's time to look back and look ahead. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. Kimberly Fox came to the Cook County State's Attorney's Office as a seasoned veteran. She had worked there before, and she returned in 2016 to a justice system in flux. The 16 shots from a police officer's gun that killed teenager Laquan McDonald were still reverberating through the court system, and the public debates over violent crime and police misconduct were well underway, and it has been an eventful 8 years since. Well, we're just a couple of weeks before Kim Fox formally leaves the office, and she's sitting down to talk with us via Zoom. And I guess the first thing I want to ask you is, what's the biggest emotion with which you're departing that office? I mean, it could be anywhere from relief to excitement to I'm not sure.
It's a recitement, then, I guess. It's relief and excitement. Rolled into one. No, it's been bittersweet, Craig. Having worked in that office, both as the lead prosecutor and as an assistant prosecutor for 20 years, there's been no more rewarding work. And so it will be hard to say goodbye to my colleagues and to be on the ground on these issues and meeting families where they are. But at the same time, it's been a grueling 8 years as the top prosecutor. And I'm in need of some rest.
Well, I mean, I have to say, it's not like you were expecting a walk in the park when you first came in. I mean, this was a job that looked like it was going to be tough when you got it, right?
Yes and no. I mean, I worked in the office for 12 years under Richard Devine and Anita Alvarez. And so I wasn't unfamiliar to the aspect that, you know, controversies will come up and you'd have to weather them. I think I was taken aback by how utterly resistant some forces would be in allowing me to do the work that the people elected me to. And so, you know, it was always going to be tough work. I knew that work. I wasn't unfamiliar, but I think I was surprised by the level of resistance that we met.
Mm-hmm. And you came to the state's attorney's office, or at least came back to the state's attorney's office with a reputation as a proponent for criminal justice reform. And in some ways, you were taking over an office that was Sometimes accused of being way too cozy with police. That was an adjustment. I mean, that had to be a culture change for that office.
It did. I mean, I think one, having a prosecutor, the top prosecutor, say we have to reform the system, that the system is broken and we have a role to play in it, was a bit jarring. And then you add to it, you know, I did come in the wake of the killing of Laquan McDonald and the public's outrage around police accountability and the fact that police are on every single criminal case that we have. They are our natural partners in this work. And my coming in and saying, has this office done everything that we are supposed to do to ensure that they are acting, our police partners are acting with their constitutional mandate? And when they're not, what are we doing about it? And so there was an inherent tension for internally that was not how we positioned ourselves previously, and externally with our partners, who certainly didn't appreciate that we were addressing that relationship differently than my predecessors.
Was the relationship with the Chicago police and consequently the police union poison from the start, or was that something that kind of grew as you went along?
Well, I'm glad that you separate out Chicago police and the police union, because they are two different things. And I will say, before I even started, Craig, there was a blog that many retired and some current police officers use called Second City Cop. And that blog, before I even put my hand on the Bible, had published inflammatory things about me. There was a post that said, you know, she has two daughters. Here's her address. They put my address on that blog. And so they were ready. They were ready for a fight. On the police side, though, you know, I found strong partnership with Eddie Johnson, that we, you know, both grew up in the city, both grew up from Cabrini Green. I appreciated that Eddie had a difficult job ahead of him. And our job was to, again, hold them accountable, but be supportive in ways that we could. And so I think the narrative about my relationship with police got conflated with Kevin Graham of the FOP, later John Catanzara. But largely, we had a good working relationship, with the exception of Superintendent Brown.
And one thing that developed fairly early on, the relationship with conservatives and the retail merchants, that was the sector that I heard from first. That soured when you raised the threshold for felony prosecutions for theft from $500 to $1,000. We heard from police chiefs, of course, and the retailers. And I'm not sure people completely understood what that was about. All they knew was that people were saying, "Oh, well, she doesn't care about retail theft." Why did you make that move?
Certainly. And you're right. To this day, people bring up the retail theft piece, and it's clear that there's not an understanding. So in Illinois, the threshold is actually $300. And it is one of the lowest thresholds for a felony anywhere in the country. That number was, or that value to be tried as a felony, was given way back in 2005. And so as people talk about inflation and the cost of things this day, appreciate that $300 in 2005 looks very different than $300 in 2024, 2016. And when I looked at the research and data, the Pew Research Institute, who does an incredible amount of work on criminal justice research, found that Illinois stood as an outlier. Indiana, Wisconsin, Missouri, Kentucky, Minnesota, all of our neighbors had much higher thresholds. In fact, Wisconsin's $2,000. In Minnesota, the home of Target had a threshold of $1,000. We were an outlier. Additionally, Governor Rauner had commissioned a bipartisan criminal justice committee to make recommendations on reducing the jail population. And that committee, again, bipartisan, made recommendations to Governor Rauner to raise the threshold to $2,000. And so even what we were proposing or doing was half of what was being recommended. And in line with where we saw others, there was a lot of pushback. And we were still prosecuting cases under $1,000 as misdemeanors and freeing up our resources on felony prosecutions to go after people who were engaging in violent crimes like guns and shootings.
I want to talk about another aspect that I think you'll probably be more known for, as far as changes in the office, because you were trying to get cash bail phased out in the justice system even before you got that job. So why did it take so long to get that through? Because I think at some point along the way, even conservatives like the group Right on Crime, for example, were also taking up that banner.
Well, you know, it was long, and it's also, I appreciate that no other state in the country has done it. And so despite the road being long and arduous, we are the first state to legislatively abolish cash bail. And so and you're right, I started on this work way back in 2013 when I worked for President Preckwinkle. I was brought in to help reduce the jail population, which was hovering somewhere around 10,500 to 11,000 people a day. I think it took long, largely because people didn't understand the bail system. A lot of people didn't appreciate that we had people sitting in jail who weren't a threat to the public, but were there because they couldn't afford something as little as $500. And nor could they appreciate that there were people who were charged with shootings and murder, who, if they had enough money, could write a check and get out. And so I think the struggle was getting people to understand that the system that we had in place was not making us safer. The moment you start talking about letting people out of jail, people instinctively think, well, if they're in jail, they belong there. And trying to explain who belonged there and who didn't, and telling the stories of the impact that it had on families and outcomes, was a lot of work that a lot of coalition builder movement leaders were doing that I happen to be a part of and I'm really proud of.
What turned the tide in your view? Was it when people on the more conservative side of the ledger started talking about, wait, we're saving money on this as well? I mean, I'm not sure when things turned the other way.
So I will say, like, groups like Right on Crime and a lot of conservative groups nationally have been aligned with criminal justice reform for a while. You weren't seeing that in Cook County. I think that was one of the frustrations for me, is that it was actually very polarized here along political leanings. The Republicans here, despite the fact, again, that Governor Rauner's commission made the recommendation, were very much on the tough on crime. So Right on Crime meant nothing here. Nationally, those groups were saying, listen, we're spending a lot of money on incarceration, and there could be better uses of that. I think where bail reform shifted here, I give credit to President Preckwinkle for her early efforts to highlight this issue to the Illinois Supreme Court. So under the leadership of then Justice Ann Burke, way back in 2013, they said, we want to look at the courts. Look at bails across the state. And so early in 2014 into 2015, there had begun work to look at bail practices across the state. And that started to increase people's interest in it. And I will say that after George Floyd, and again, a renewed verve for criminal justice reform, is when I think the political courage to say, let's put pen to paper and change the law. It was not bipartisan here in Illinois. It was strictly along partisan lines. But I think enough work had been done, including the work in our office, to change bail thresholds in 2017, gave them the confidence that the data, the research, and the evidence would support a change.
And I should ask you how you feel now that we've been more than a year into cash bail being gone, and we are seeing what it hath wrought.
Yeah, there's people often ask, am I vindicated? Because there was a very large organized disinformation campaign. That was racialized around language about the purge and newspapers with pictures of darkened faces of Black men being distributed across the state, saying that basically this justice system would collapse. And a year plus out, clearly that has not happened. And it doesn't feel, I don't feel vindicated. I'm actually saddened that in an attempt to be innovative and thoughtful about our system, that the resistance would be so ugly and so blatant in their willingness to fearmonger and demean segments of our community. But I already knew that this was going to work. I think the evidence was already clear to me that if we move to this model, that this model would work. And so I feel affirmed, if not vindicated, but I think it speaks to we need to do better in our policy discussions as a community.
And one other change that happened on your watch, it was the focus on wrongful convictions. What touched off that focus for you?
You know, even before I ran, there was a segment on 60 Minutes that aired about the Inglewood Four, who were four young men who were juveniles at the time who were convicted of the killing of Nina Glover. And ultimately, they were released from prison after DNA evidence pointed to someone else who had done this, a convicted sex offender who had eventually died. And my predecessor went on 60 Minutes and could not openly acknowledge that the system had gotten it wrong. And watching the pain of those young men and their families, of like, the system got it wrong and they won't even acknowledge it. And so that always stuck with me. I also had a friend that I went to high school with who was wrongfully convicted of a murder that he didn't commit, who came out.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
While I was running for office, came to our 25th high school reunion, and I saw him, and it was like very hard hitting to me that I remember him in gym class, and he went away and then came back and missed a swath of his life. So that's what, it was very personal to me. As a prosecutor, you know, one of the things that should keep us up at night is making sure that we have the right people in jail. And if we got the wrong ones there, we should be as eager and fervent to get them out as we are to put the right ones in.
Mm-hmm. You are listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Delamore. My guest is departing Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox. I must talk about the case that probably will always hang over your tenure, and that involves Empire TV show actor Jussie Smollett. He was accused of faking a hate crime against him. You dropped the charges. A special prosecutor did charge and convict him. And on this, the day that we are recording this interview, comes word that the Illinois Supreme Court has overturned that conviction. The court ruled that special prosecutor Dan Webb's decision to retry the actor violated his rights because of double jeopardy. And you can correct me on the legal points if I'm wrong. But it's essentially a rule that you can't try someone twice for the same crime. So, Kim Fox, how do you feel about that ruling?
You know, Craig, I'm not surprised. I knew the moment that a special prosecutor was requested, when Sheila O'Brien went into the public square and said, we need to re-litigate this case, that the law did not substantiate that. As unpopular as the disposition was, and I don't negate that it was an unpopular disposition of his case, it was over. In exchange for the case being dismissed, you know, a prosecutor in my office negotiated with him that he would forfeit his $10,000 in bail money, that he would have to have done community service, and he did that. And in exchange, the case was dismissed in ways that we do thousands of times every year. And so the fact that there was all of this effort to undermine that decision because it was unpopular, and then really upend all of our criminal justice norms to reopen the case, have a special prosecutor, re-indict him, try him, to end up 5 years later, millions of dollars later, with the exact same result that we had in March of 2019 is unsurprising, but I think speaks volumes about how we look at criminal justice in Cook County.
Indeed, but no, I have not heard, I haven't had time to hear any reaction from any of the others involved in this case, but I can imagine that some will say, well, if Kim Fox had handled the case differently, we wouldn't have this problem. I mean, there are some cases that there's always going to be someone who has that judgment, and this case is probably one of the premier of them.
Again, I don't discount that people may disagree with decisions that we make. I have to sit with families when we might have to plead to an offense that is lesser than the charged offense if we want to get a conviction. I understand people directly impacted by decisions that we have to make. What made this case unique, and I think that's the part that I have been trying to say for the last several years, is that an unpopular decision does not give you the right to do double jeopardy. And with Mr. Webb, who was the special prosecutor appointed, I said way back in 2022 that this was a kangaroo prosecution. Mr. Webb is one of the premier prosecutors in the country. He was the U.S. attorney for the Northern District here. He worked on the Iran-Contra hearings. This is someone who knows prosecution and criminal law. The fact that today the Illinois Supreme Court in a 5-0 ruling said that this is basic criminal justice, their criminal procedure law, this is basic. Mr. Webb knew that. And Judge Tooman knew that. But what this was, I believe, an attempt to undermine me and my office. And we could talk about Mr. Smollett all day. I said from the very beginning that we believe that Mr. Smollett had committed the act for which he was accused. He was accused of filing a false police report, actually. He wasn't accused of, like, staging all of the things before it, because you can do that. The crime was he filed a false police report. We agreed at the beginning that, yes, he did. And we gave a disposition that we felt was in line with that. But what happened afterwards is an indictment on our justice system.
Mm. Well, I want to ask you, because all along there have been times when the partnership with the city and the Chicago Police Department's been good, and times when it hasn't. How frustrating was it during the period when a police superintendent like David Brown and a mayor or two would blame the state's attorney's office for too many criminals being on the streets, that either not going hard enough with them or I mean, tell me how that played in your office.
It was incredibly frustrating. Again, I've lived in Cook County my entire life, and I remember homicide rates hovering around 900 or 1,000. I had a friend who was killed when I was a junior in high school, and he was one of 800 plus people killed that year. And I never heard blame being assigned to the state's attorney. I'd never seen it. And so it was jarring to me. You know, I had a good working relationship with Superintendent Johnson. We didn't agree on everything, but there was a healthy level of respect for our roles and how we would engage around them. So I was surprised with Superintendent Brown, who did not have that level of respect. And I will say, you know, I'm very open about it now, because now that we have, you know, subsequent superintendent, Superintendent Snelling is an incredible partner with the state's attorney's office. We work with him very well. It is night and day from Superintendent Brown, who was not from here, who in an unenviable position came here in the middle of a global pandemic, in the middle of the racial reckoning and people taking to the streets with the department for which he was unfamiliar. And so I believe he was overwhelmed. I believe the former mayor was overwhelmed by what was happening with crime, violence, and the pandemic, and did what some politicians are one to do, which is scapegoat. And it was incredibly frustrating because the people deserved better than that. But, history has proven that David Brown was not the superintendent for this department. And while I wish him well, I think people are better served by the leadership they have now.
But now, looking at as you're about to leave this office, I have to think that for all the ups and downs, still you've come a long way for a little girl from Cabrini Green, huh?
Yeah, it is. It's been such an honor. People ask me for about the downs a lot because they were public and they were brutal. But to come from 624 West Division and be able to not only go to law school and graduate and pass the bar and be a lawyer, but the top prosecutor, the first Black woman to lead this office, is such. It's not lost on me how awesome a responsibility that was, not just from my family. I believe my mother and grandmother, had they lived, would be really proud, but for young people in neighborhoods across this city who have narratives already pre-written about them and what they can accomplish, to be able to demonstrate that no matter where you come from, you have the ability to give back and lead. And that has been such an honor for me over the course of the last 8 years.
I one of the things that struck me was in the campaign for your job, even the Republican candidate for the job, Bob Fioretti, promised to employ restorative justice. That and would you ever have expected that kind of for people on both sides to say, well, no, restorative justice is a good thing?
No, I mean, now I do. When I came in, I wouldn't have thought that. But I will acknowledge we've fundamentally shifted criminal justice in Cook County. It's just a fact that running for this seat, you don't run, and people are saying, oh, they're running on tough on crime. No, they were talking about restorative justice. I heard state's attorney-elect say publicly she's going to keep many of the policies that we've had, that in the primary, there was, again, this focus on a repair of the system. And 8 years ago, there was not an acknowledgement that the system was broken. And so in this short period of time, to see the historic legislation from marijuana to bail reform to the wrongful convictions being vacated and emphasis on diversion, it speaks to how transformed this system has become in 8 years.
So, what do you do next? And you don't have to tell me like exactly which place you're going to, but I can't imagine you just going out and putting your feet up for the next several years.
I'm trying to imagine it, Craig. I'm trying to imagine going and putting my feet up at least for the next couple of months. One of the things that I do want to also model, particularly for, women and working mothers, Black women who are first in their positions or others who are first, that this takes a toll. I'm really proud of what we've done, but it's come at a cost, sometimes to my peace of mind, to the time away from my children and family. I got divorced a couple years ago in the midst of doing this work, and we deserve an opportunity to heal. And I want to model that we don't always have to grind, that we can refuel and rest. And I believe that there will be opportunities, there have been opportunities presented to me thus far, some very intriguing and exciting. But I want to be able to be recharged before I do my next thing. So I'm going to rest.
Well, you deserve that, but I know it was important to you for little girls to be able to look at you and see that they could make a difference. I can't believe that you would give that up.
Well, I'm still here. And when I go to the grocery store and a mom taps her daughter on her shoulders and says, "Do you know who that is?" And sometimes they don't, and it's like, "Who is that?" And it's like, "Oh, that's the lady from TV." And the mom says she's a lawyer and she brings her over. I don't think that goes away. I think the impact that we've had is long lasting. And can't be undone. And so I think the influence that I have, in the same way I tell people, the first Black woman lawyer I knew was Claire Huxtable. And when I met Claire Huxtable, Felicia Rashad in real life, you know, I had tears in my eyes. What I know is that there's a generation of young Black girls in this county who have no idea that it is not possible to be a Black woman leader. They live believing this is possible. My daughters get to have seen that this is just what we do. We're welcome in every circle.
I mean, are there times when, you know, in a quiet moment, you look in the mirror and say, you know what? I did okay. I did really good.
I'm getting better at it. When you're in the thick of it, it never feels like there's enough. I am the type A personality. It's like, what's next? What's more? But as I've had to reflect, as I've packed up my boxes over the course of the last several days, and do look at some of the headlines around, you know, the first mass exoneration or the legalization of marijuana or bail reform, and my face is there, that the history books will write about this history in criminal justice, and I'll, you know, be a little more than a footnote, that I am incredibly proud.
Thank you. I would like to thank Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox for spending this half hour with us. And really, thank you for all the times we've been able to talk.
Of course.
To our listeners, if you'd like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website. That is WBBMNewsRadio.com. There's a link on the homepage. You can also find our podcasts on Odyssey.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Dullamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.